Hey now, welcome. We're here at the Cardinals Stand Out in Your Career podcast presented by Alumni Relations here at SVSU. My name is Nick Taylor. I'm the Executive Director of Alumni Relations here with the university. And today I have a very special guest. I have Miss Emily Amthor here, who is our HR Communications Specialist here at the university and a very proud SVSU alum. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you.
So we have a big topic today. We're talking about all things positive work culture. Topic that's, I think, super important. Something that I think folks know when they're in a bad work culture, but maybe not really understand or know what it takes to create a positive work culture. So from your perspective, can you maybe, let's just put a broad definition out there. What do you think defines a positive work environment?
Collaboration.
Okay.
Having a collaborative environment, working with your teammates or across your organization. Inclusive. Respectful. Everyone deserves respect. Yeah. And then having a growth mindset for, you know, the organization, for your leaders. And that growth mindset could look differently to different people. I feel a part of the growth is the willingness and openness to accept new ideas or be open to change. But then also growth is that your employees see, you know, a succession plan for them or see a trajectory of them within the organization. I feel all of that contributes to a positive work culture. Of course, though, within that is like your communication, like open communication. I think that all goes with your collaborative and then also inclusive. Like your employees want to see, they want to feel seen and heard, and they want to be valued.
Now, I want to take a step back. You said growth mindset within the institution, and I firmly believe that. What does that mean? So when I ask that, it means something a little bit different for everybody, right?
Yeah.
For you personally, when you're working in your day-to-day work environment, what is it that you're looking for as far as the growth mindset of the folks that are working around you?
Yeah. So I think those open to ideas, communicative, but then not only that, but just also for trajectory of people and their roles, you know, knowing that there's... If that's something that they want, like they know that there's steps up and, you know, have that type of growth, but then also, again, having the growth just within your department and knowing, or in your organization, knowing that, you know, there's always room for new ideas. There's room for change. There's, it's more kind of like your silos are down and you're, again, the collaborative aspect. So there's more collaboration, you know, within your department or your division or your organization.
I love the way you said that because being collaborative is super important and it helps everybody feel to be part of the team, right? I also, for me, when you talk about growth mindset, I always think about what gets recognized, right, at an institution or an organization or for our alumni friends out there, you know, wherever they're working, what gets recognized? Is it the effort? Is it the skill? Is it the just the metrics, right, on that? And for me, when you first said that, it kind of sparked an interest, right? I was like, oh, okay, I haven't thought of it in as far as positive work culture with growth mindset, but really if... What I want to hear, the feedback I want to hear is praise for the effort and the outcome, right? So it's more of, you know, we've been in a bad work environment at some point in our career, right? And we think back and usually the folks who are praised and that don't necessarily deserve the praise or get it solely because of their presence in that. And that makes other folks feel undervalued along the way. So I love that you brought that up right away. We're talking about positive work experience in there. What are some, you know, you talk about collaboration and the growth mindset and some of those. What are some of the core elements that you think need to be in place for some of those things to even exist?
So I think part really starts with your leader within your department.
Yeah.
You know, having a strong leader presence, but then also for that, I believe that leader sets that tone potentially for that department. If you are working in an area where you have a direct leader in there in your office, of course,
sure.
In other you know, organizations, your leader might not even sit with you, you know, so that might not be part of it. But for those that have leaders, I feel like the leader really sets that tone of wanting, like you mentioned, the feedback, mm-hmm. wanting feedback, being open with their employees, open about themselves, also owning when they've made a mistake. I think that's huge from that communication standpoint. Mm-hmm. And that also hopefully shows your employees that, hey, if I screw up, like it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I know I can come to my manager and it'd be okay. I feel like that all contributes to a positive work environment. And then if they set that tone and kind of take down those, you know, walls or those barriers potentially by having regular meetings, as regular mm-hmm. meetings with staff, one-on-one meetings with staff, whatever that looks like for them. But then encouraging their employees to collaborate together to find mm-hmm. creative solutions for things, not always coming to your leader, like mm-hmm. making sure that you are allowed to create solutions, like you can come mm-hmm. up with your solutions and, you know, you can help solve those problems. And then by all means, if you have to, you know, then you go to your manager and be like, hey, like mm-hmm. this is the problem, but here are the solutions we have for it. Like, what do you think?
Yeah.
You know, that shows that you're working together, and that also welcomes all of those opinions with your coworkers.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put a pause right here because something you said there really stuck with me. And, Ryan is going to do the flashing button on the video here, of course, saying separate piece of advice. One thing you said, and I'm a very big believer that this is an employee's responsibility in creating a positive work culture is come with solutions, not just problems. Doesn't mean they have to be the solutions that we're going to do, right?
Oh, right, right. It might not be. I think it was last year I attended a discussion with, and I've always been a solution seeker myself, mm-hmm. and I think that is something that does help with, but I attended a session that we had in the university with Andrew Liveris, and the mm-hmm. one thing he said is, I have no problem meeting with my employees, but they better be bringing me solutions and not just problems. Mm-hmm. And it was this very similar, like your mm-hmm. solution might not be the one, but it at least shows me you are utilizing creative thinking. You're mm-hmm. potentially collaborating to come up with that solution. And it might not be the one we go with, but mm-hmm. at least shows me that you are taking an interest. You're working together as a team mm-hmm. and you just don't expect me to solve all, you know, your problems. Right. And so that really stuck with me since that mm-hmm. session. And even though I've always been more solution driven, that really, I have to go to my leader, or if I'm working on a team
right.
with others, like outside of my department, I'm like, okay, so this is our problem. Let's just throw out some solutions, you know, and then we narrow down, is that really feasible or not?
Mm-hmm. I think it also kind of builds trust when you come, with, even if the solutions are not, and I in my past work experiences, have been very guilty of going and saying, okay, I need to provide three different solutions, knowing solution, and I usually put it first, solution one is the one we're not going to do, but I at least need to show I've thought the process yeah. through as part of it. And I know that for the folks that I've worked for in there, they've gone and saying, well, okay, yeah, that's not a good idea, Nick. What do you mean? But I at least couldn't recognize the fact that I'm coming to them with those solutions mm-hmm. and trying to be productive. And, you know, talking about the positive work culture, in each of those, one of the other things that you said right at the beginning that stuck was that level of respect, right? Mm-hmm. Respect is always earned along the way.
Hey, cool. No.
No? All right.
And
school me.
I am only saying that because I just attended the session yeah. of I Respectfully Disagree with Justin Jones Foss. I'm saying it right. Yeah. But he just came to campus yesterday. And that is one of the things that has been a society norm. No, on it within his book, you can hear it too, yeah. but he mentioned it yesterday. And that was one thing that stuck out with me is it is, oh my gosh, it's the golden respect. Yeah. He has a column of golden respect, and that's number two on his list. And no, everyone deserves respect. Everyone deserves respect. And mm-hmm. it was, respect is different than, say, wisdom. And so, you know, and
I see your difference.
You know, maybe somebody that, you know, is, you know, highly regarded. He's yeah. like, that's generally something that somebody has been in their career a long time. They do have a lot of, you know, sure. so they would be highly regarded, but everyone should be respected. And that was something that stuck off me because something I bet a ton of listeners or yourself, you've always heard respect is earned.
Yeah.
I've always heard that.
Absolutely.
Literally until yesterday. And he was
good timing us. Look
I
at
know.
This.
Yeah. And so that's why it was, I was like, oh, wow. And you had to pick three that stuck out with you. And that's one that stuck out with me because I have always been definitely brought up that way, that you respect your elders. You know, respect is earned. Like, it's just, and he completely was like, no, everyone is human. Everyone deserves respect. It doesn't matter what their title is.
Sure.
Everyone deserves respect. But he's like, respect is different than someone you hold in high regard.
That's the difference.
So it was, so it was a very good session he did on campus. But like I said, he just was talking about it yesterday.
Oh,
so
we'll
it was
have to
very
look that
cool.
Up.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah. So I didn't want to cut you off. It was.
I love this because, you know, even in our, we're coworkers in a sense. We both work for the same organization. I love these kind of discussions because this is how you learn.
Yeah.
I see what I hear from you in that discussion is I was coming back where I was using the word respect, but really what I should be saying is high regard or influence maybe is what's earned over time.
Yes.
And I should watch my words on that.
Well, and that's what he was saying. Just he's like, I think it's got over the years, it's been... It's been not twisted, but it's been utilized in this manner and it really shouldn't be.
Sure.
It, you know, and that's it. It's the influence or it's the regard, like you hold someone in high regard. Yeah. That's how you should be pronouncing it.
I think we all have this basic level of respect for humans and other folks. And then we're earning higher regard.
Yes.
I love that designation. I'm going to use that now. See?
Yeah.
I love that's it. Cool. It's good. Mm-hmm. So kind of on that same train of thought, you know, We try to put this positive work culture a lot in the strategies and things that directors or, you know, for lack of a better term, I use the term boss here because titles are different for all different organizations. Mm-hmm. But our superiors are always trying to strategically think how they can create a positive work culture. What are some, putting on your HR hat, right? What are some HR policy type questions or strategies that our folks can use to try to foster better positive work, a better positive work culture for themselves? Is it a policy in place? Is it just a strategy? What are?
I think it's probably more of a strategy than a per se policy.
Okay.
And I believe it has to start at your top level and go down. That it has to be shown throughout the entire organization. And when you specifically speak about bosses, I think one way for bosses is to be intentional with their staff and include their staff in things. Are you, you know, you talked about the recognition earlier.
Absolutely.
Are you recognizing them that, hey, they just like busted their butt working on work day? Did you give them a kudos for that? You know, this is an addition to their role. Or
I love the work day example. That's very personal here at SVSU.
Yes, here it is. So, but any system, like, you know, but you talk about the recognition piece, like, are they, I feel as hard as that bosses could be thinking, or, you know, I call them people managers, could be thinking that they are doing a great job of that and they're really not. And, but I think that's where you also, when you talk about like the feedback, like I personally feel that feedback, some organizations, they do manager feedback. You know, something we did at the school district when I was there, and I think that is great. I want feedback. I want feedback from, you know, my other, you know, counterparts. And you don't know unless, you know, you've been told it. And so if your employees are coming to you be like, you think this, but you haven't even recognized me, or you haven't, I don't feel seen here. And without having, it's more having stay interviews even, like with your employees, instead of meeting with them exit, you know, with HR, having managers or people, bosses, whatever you want to call them, are you having stay interviews with your employee? Why are they here? Why do they enjoy being here? Or are you discovering that they don't enjoy being here?
Yeah.
And then how can we work on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, you know, bosses should be intentionally setting that time with their employees.
One thing that we do, I'm really proud, and we can use that term, with the development of our office and the development of folks that have been in alumni relations. And something that I learned, from a coworker, someone who works for the office, you know, we were having a tough time with that feedback loop. I always had the old school, my door is always open mentality. You can tell me anything, that sort of thing. But knowing now what I know, what I realize is I can think that, and I can know that I was always ready for that. But unless I explicitly speak it into existence and put it out there, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get that feedback, right? Because we all have that hesitation when we're working with a boss or a superior. We mm-hmm. don't want to, you know, step on their toes. We don't want to hurt their feelings. We don't want to do some of those things. Excuse me. And so one of the things that we did is we built it into, we have a weekly one-on-one meeting for everyone in our staff. They meet with me one-on-one. We take 10 minutes to talk about what they accomplished the past week. We take mm-hmm. 10 minutes about what they have to accomplish this upcoming week. And that's my job to go and say, okay, what hurdles, what resources do you need? My job is to fix those things so they can really do their job really well. Mm-hmm. And then we've kind of changed. We had this last 10 minutes where we talked about our priorities, and it was my open-ended, hey, is there anything you want to tell me? Mm-hmm. And we've kind of changed the format a little bit based on some very good constructive criticism that came from an employee. And we have this little TikTok trend. I hate to use the TikTok trend, but it's called Nick listens and he doesn't judge. Do you know what I'm talking about?
With TikTok? No, okay. But I like it.
So the whole point of that part of the meeting is that person, it's their time. They have the floor. Whatever they say, I can sit, I can take in as feedback and mm-hmm. as the leader of the office. And in that time space, they're not going to get a reaction. They're not going to get me to come back and say, well, I don't believe that, or I can't believe you said that. That's never mm-hmm. going to happen. It's just, I'm listening and I'm not judging. I'm hearing you where you're at. Mm-hmm. And, since we've implemented it, it's been really nice because it draws more things out that I need to learn. Yeah. And I think it's given people a better chance to express some of those things mm-hmm. without that fear of, hey, you know, how's he going to take this kind of mm-hmm. thing? So put in your HR toolkit there. I would give that a big 2 thumbs up as far as having a good relationship back and forth and creating a positive work culture.
Yeah, I think that relationship piece is key for having that, just that comfortability mm-hmm. of that employee coming to mm-hmm. that manager. But one thing I also just learned from the Courageous Conversation was, instead of a open door policy, it is a out the door policy. And that, yes.
Okay, I'm interested.
And he's like, you expect your employees to always come to you. Are you ever getting out to them? Are you meeting them to where they're at? Are you visiting them? And it was, mm-hmm. And I, you know, from working with different managers, mm-hmm. I know they never come out of their office, mm-hmm. but they have an open door policy where like, it's more like, no, come to me. And, but like he said, Justin said that, you know, there's a lot of hesitation sometimes from employees because they just, oh, they're too busy for me, or I don't want to bother them. And so he's like, and no, I understand managers can't always come out of their door, but he's like, but what if it's once a month or, you know, once a quarter, even mm-hmm. just really making rounds and, again, being intentional with your employees. And then the one piece he talked about where you don't sit, you just sit there and you, mm-hmm. you know, no judgment, knew that. He brought up how he had an exiting employee. And again, he's like, I thought I could probably respectfully disagree with some other things. Right. But instead, I continue to ask why. You know, or tell me more about that. And I totally resonates with what you just said about what you do with the non-judging is that essentially is what, you know, he was talking about in his own way that he was saying, or that you're saying mm-hmm. in his own way that, you know, you're taking it all in and, like you said, you might implement things after the fact or, mm-hmm. you know, which is kind of what he mentioned.
What I love about these strategies, and I call them strategies, you know, these are activities.
Right, I think it's more, I think it's strategy more so than like policy. I think it's definitely just strategies that.
What I like about them is they're substantive and they're easy to do. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, we're a cost conscious culture, so we're mm-hmm. worried. And a lot of times I can think of 20 bad examples of the, we're going to have a pizza party and that's going to make everything all right. That's the perk, right? And can you talk a little bit about how do we get to that point where we think that that's going to be a solution? And then how do we work with our coworkers or our leadership to kind of point back to these substantive strategies?
I don't think the pizza party is a solution. I
get me wrong. I like some pizza.
But I think that's, we'll hold these food gatherings, whether mm-hmm. it be potlucks or whatever, and that's going to be this collaborative perk thing that they do. I don't think so. I think it starts with surveying your employees and seeing what they want.
Right.
I don't think they want a pizza party. Yeah. I think they probably want transparent, open communication from the top down. They want everyone wants to be treated with respect. They want to see potentially advancement opportunities. They want good benefits and pay. Yeah. And they're like all these things that contribute, but then also to have the positive, you know, culture is, again, I feel it starts at the top and it works its way down. It has to go all the way through. But it starts with almost those conversations, though. It starts with, you know, your upper level having conversations with director level and then continuing that down, though, and meeting everybody. Like, it's, again, when that conversation happened yesterday, of titles don't matter. Like, everyone deserves that same respect. Are you having the conversations with everyone? Are you meeting with custodial staff? Are you meeting with maintenance staff or those that sometimes feel forgotten? You know, are you meeting with them? And are you, I mean, and that all goes back to that inclusive piece. Like, do they feel included? So I'm kind of getting off, I think, on the pizza party, but I think it really starts with surveying your employees. And I know people have feelings about surveys and we have too many surveys or whatever you want to call it, questionnaires, surveys, but until you get the data back and then can build from that, you're never going to know.
How do we, I agree with you 100%. How do we build enough trust so that our employees, the people, our coworkers, feel like they can fill out that survey and be open and honest? That's a tough question. I think we could write four books on that.
And I, and which is, you know, trust is different than respect. I do think trust is something that does have to be earned unless someone comes up with a book on it and says otherwise. But I do think that is something that you continually have to work on. But you just, at some point, you just almost hopefully have to just trust it. Otherwise, if you have that mindset of they're going to do nothing with this data, or I also don't, my hope is that if there's enough action behind it, it'll show people that they'll start trusting. If it's, and I'm not saying HR is doing the survey, or if it's your HR off, I mean, something like this, I would feel it's the HR office that would do the survey. But my hope would be that over time, there's enough relationships established across the organization that they will trust that that HR is wanting to make a change. They're going to make an impact. But then they also, your employees have to see it. If they don't see any of it, then they're probably not going to trust that you're going to do anything. So why should I even fill it out? So I think, but you have to, if we want to see the change, people have to fill it out in order to implement it. So it's just, it is, it's a vicious cycle.
It's the proverbial chicken or the egg, right? Which is going to come first.
Yes. And I, but I, my, and again, depending on your organization, if there is, you know, for us, we've had various leadership, you know, new leaders in place and just a lot of change, which can be hard for employees to deal with. But my hope with that is that they'd be willing to at least give it a try. If they haven't filled it out yet and said, my trust is lost. And then having maybe those intentional conversations, like the directors encouraging their staff to fill it out. I will say one thing that has worked is, which is, you know, got to put money into it, but prizes. If you offer people something to fill out the survey, they generally do it. Which I don't want. I want, and I want the honest feedback. And I think another way to do that is you can make it, like an anonymous survey, like you can do that. And so, but even that, people don't that believe, they don't trust that it's, that it is. But there are, like, there truly are ways where we, and we don't have to make it like, are you, well, for a data point, I'd like to see if it's, you know, your different employee groups, but like, you don't have to put department size, age, how long you've been at the institution, because those are all factors, even if it was that you potentially could figure out, like, where did that person lie, you know? But remove those. Don't even do those. I don't even care. Like, if they aren't comfortable filling that out, don't fill that out. All I care about is the honest feedback of how you're feeling about the institution or about HR or your leader, or like, what can we do to help build that positive, you know, the positive work culture. And with rolling out the, at least for our university, the strategic plan, you know, and those different pillars, it's, I could potentially see various maybe surveys going out to try to I don't know, to work on that. I feel like you need data to start with.
Right.
So.
Well, and you bring up a really good point about trusting the surveys and wanting that. We all want the honest feedback, right? Good leaders and a positive work culture really wants the feedback in order to make change. And we have to build that. Mm-hmm. You gave me a great recommendation. I'm going to give you one here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read The Thin Book of Trust by Feltman. Amazing read. It's like 90 pages long. You can knock it out real quick. But he basically breaks it down in understanding that trust is also, you know, I learned a lot about respect from you. Trust is not binary. We think of trust as being, I either trust you or I don't. There's a lot of gray area in between there. And we really build trust in four different ways: showing competence, being sincere, so actually meaning what we say, mm-hmm. but also caring. Show that not only am I sincere, that I'm meaning what I'm saying, but I actually am thinking about you in this situation as well. Mm-hmm. And then most importantly, at the end, being reliable. Knowing, and I think that's what made me think of that is when you're talking about folks being nervous or not trusting of these surveys, it's one of those two ways. Either we don't really think that you're sincere in your want of this and you're going to use this against me, or it's the reliability factor. Okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I've told you this over and over again. Are you going to do something with it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that sentiment, I think talking about a positive work culture, we need to kind of build trust in all four of those areas. And reliability is a big one in that. So,
and I think when you have new leaders come on board, mm-hmm. it's hard to be like, well, I've done that before. Not with me, you haven't.
Right.
So I think everyone deserves that chance, though, too, mm-hmm. when you have new leaders or a new director, anything come up like that. And right. they want, because even if it's not at the VP level, it's at the director level, you have a new director come in. Mm-hmm. Well, I understand, but I'm new. I want the feedback. I want, and right. then, and send it out.
So, you know, we've kind of hit all over the topic and gone away. Let's talk about some changes in positive workplace culture. The last 5 years have thrown the workplace in disarray. Now, when we talk about more people who are out there working remote or hybrid coming in so often, do you see like remote work, especially in hybrid working, affecting workplace culture? Or is it we still get that the culture can be transmitted in those ways?
I think it still can. I think it actually adds to it. Especially from a hybrid standpoint.
Sure.
Because I feel that all goes back to you're taking care of your employee. Like, say mm-hmm. if you have a hybrid work policy,
yeah.
That, you know what, they don't have childcare or something came up, but that helps them tremendously if they can work remotely that day, if their job allows, and they can do that. That continues to build, the trust with the employee and the mm-hmm. manager. It builds morale with the employee. And then also knowing that their employer is flexible in that manner for mm-hmm. that. So I feel that definitely can still, even if it is remote. Now, if you have 100% remote,
sure.
I think it potentially, there's just other challenges to it.
Yeah.
Because you're 100%, I think you really have to be intentional then with your one-on-one times, your meeting times,
mm-hmm.
And checking in. Because I think it can be really lonely depending on if you're in a role that you really don't communicate a lot with your other coworkers or anything and you're 100% remote.
Sure.
I know that when, you know, we had to go, you know, remote, you know, I really only, unless I really had to work on something, you know, we only a couple coworkers, but what really helped was continuously having the team meetings mm-hmm. so you could still feel connected. So mm-hmm. if you are in that type of environment, definitely do that to help promote that. But I think the hybrid piece, I think it helps your positive work culture because of that flexibility that it offers your employees.
Sure. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I agree with you. I think it has to be intentional. And it mm-hmm. has to be, and I struggle with, and maybe this is a good question here, you know, what are the metrics we can measure workplace culture, positive or negative, right? Going back to your surveying data thing, uh-huh. right? Like, how do we even say we're good, we got to work in on this level? And by going remote or hybrid, I think you have to be intentional of affecting those metrics, like, showing, yeah, we're spending some time doing those things. Mm-hmm. Another you know, just talking about this whole concept of change in workplace culture. Do you have any strategies or tips, things that you could talk about looking at cross-generational workplaces?
Oh, yes.
I think that's a huge topic.
It is. And, you know, at the university, we have five, mm-hmm. you know, generations working at the university, and all of them work and learn differently.
Absolutely.
And so from a people leader perspective, and then like from HR too, like you mm-hmm. have to understand those needs and be able to, you know, of course, within reason, like adapt to each one of them. Mm-hmm. I actually just attended a V-Sherm luncheon on this. It's about, you know, workplace generations mm-hmm. in the workplace, and yeah. just, you know, tips on that, on, you know, knowing that, say, if I want to send a for training, for example, yeah. I want to send this job aid out, just a Word mm-hmm. doc. Well, my younger generations want a video. Mm-hmm. The middle generations, I'm just saying it that way. I can't remember all of them, but the middle ones.
Me, Gen X. It's okay. You can say it. It's all right. I'm right here. You're right. I got you.
Well, there's like all the five. Yeah. You have like your baby boomers. I wish yeah. I would have brought that. Like the baby boomers and this. There's all these different, you know.
Sure.
Like I said, we have five here. And yeah. so those videos have been great for the student employees or even, you mm-hmm. know, even still younger that, you know, that we have. Like they mm-hmm. have enjoyed the videos. We have the potentially baby boomers and that they prefer an in-person learning training mm-hmm. opportunity. And then some of the others might be a little bit of a mixture, or even just
sure.
the written document is fine for, mm-hmm. for training. So, but that's just knowing though that we have all these generations and we need to be able to offer something mm-hmm. for all of them. And then it comes back to that inclusive piece. So they all feel like they're included.
Sure.
And just, again, I think it's important for managers to realize that not everyone has a different learning style, has a different work style, and mm-hmm. generations and how you are raised that, and the generation where you were raised is sure. all different. And
so let me be the devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Before I do that, I'm going to tell you, I 100% agree with you on all of that. What I hear mm-hmm. coming from, I'll say folks outside of the university, especially in private practice, is that all sounds great. I wish we all could have kittens in the office, but I'm here. We have a quarterly metric that we have to hit. Mm-hmm. I only have so many resources. From your professional experience, sell me, I'll act like I'm the cranky old guy who's telling you those things. Sell me why you think workplace culture is going to benefit my organization.
I think a great one is to be like, your employees are going to leave. Mm-hmm. You're going to spend more time recruiting and hiring and then training. And then because you're stuck in that attitude, sure. it's going to be a revolving door for you. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to lose revenue.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you do not
and we see
want
it.
That, like, oh yeah. Like, I bet it's, I mean, it's especially in private practice when the really dollars count. Like, but if you are not valuing your employees, they don't feel seen, they don't feel heard, mm-hmm. you are just here for the numbers. I don't care about my employees. Sure. Keep wasting money on recruitment then, because that's exactly what's going to happen. Like,
yeah.
that high turnover, it's statistically already proven. Like, you keeping an employee, a good employee, mm-hmm. is way more cost effective than continuously hiring employees because you don't know how to treat them.
Absolutely.
And I think I'd just be just as blunt with them.
I love it. I think you can get across. I think people would listen on that. I think.
And then if you have the data, like if I went to the meeting, I'd of course have the data to back me up. But like, this is it. Like, this is what I tell them.
I would say that I think that's the piece for me, is to show the difference of losing an employee, what it costs you to lose an employee because of a bad work culture compared to what it costs to lose an employee who has outgrown the position. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Outgrowing the position uh-huh. and they've become much better. They are going to leave and they are going to bring you more business, more revenue. They are going to continue to support your organization mm-hmm. as opposed to someone who leaves and says they were treated horribly. It will cost you business and it will cost you future employees. It'll mm-hmm. be much more difficult to recruit the next person.
Yeah, it gets out there.
Okay, we're getting close to the end here. Sorry, I know. I'm having fun. This is an exciting topic, I think you can tell. Mm-hmm. We have a little tradition here towards the end of every podcast. I ask for one big piece of advice from each guest. I'm going to ask you a little differently, though, because I think this is important to make the distinction. Mm-hmm. First, I'm going to ask you, what is one big piece of advice, something that a leader can enact in their organization in the next 2 weeks to help their workplace culture? And then I'll follow that up. I think you know where I'm going with my second question. But so what's one thing that a leader could do in the next 2 weeks to help the workplace culture at their organization?
I think within 2 weeks, be intentional with their employees, intentionally meeting with their employees. If they haven't done mm-hmm. a survey or ask for feedback on mm-hmm. how they're doing, you can get that done in 2 weeks. It's very easy. And then, granted, depending on work cultures, I get it. But in 2 weeks, you could easily schedule, even if it's mm-hmm. just one team meeting, not doing one-on-ones. But then utilizing the systems, hopefully, that your organization has to then track your progress. Like, do you have a performance management software that you can track your check-ins mm-hmm. and how things are going? I mean, if you can utilize your software in a way, or like AI in any way mm-hmm. to help. I mean, if you're struggling, use AI to craft questions. Like, if I understand that not all people leaders yeah. are truly people leaders, they might have been promoted because they're an SME and they're not a people leader.
Mm-hmm.
But
wait, SME, you gotta explain what's SME.
So like a subject matter expert, they might have been, you know, promoted for that
sure.
instead of their people leader skills, but now yeah. they're overseeing people. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that's when your HR office comes into play and it says, hey, let's get you up to speed on being a people leader and offering mm-hmm. those professional development opportunities to them. But in that 2 weeks time, I'd say being intentional, and you almost mentioned mm-hmm. with the trust, caring. Again, do your employees feel seen and sure. heard and valued? And do you truly care about them?
Yeah.
That is something that you could change. Really, to me, very not saying that their behavior will change or that it'll change sure. that quickly, but it's something that you could
plant
change internally.
Seed.
Yes, you're planting. Yes. You know, the book talks a lot about that mm-hmm. too, planting the seed. You just, and those are little changes that can change, you know, make the bigger impact.
Sure. Okay. So second question. Thank mm-hmm. you. So in our podcast, we know that we have a lot of what we call gold alumni, graduates of the last decade, who are listening and looking to stand out in their career. This is their professional development on there. What would you say to the entry level recent grad, a young alum, or a recent grad who is out there, how can they positively impact their work culture from their position? Mm-hmm. I put 2 weeks out there, in the next couple of weeks, whatever it might be,
yeah.
right? Soon is what I'm trying to get mm-hmm. at.
It makes me think of when I was a entry, I think for those, it's all about mindset. Having a positive mindset, making sure that you are filling up your cup, taking that time. And I get it, you're a brand mm-hmm. new entry, so you might feel like, oh, I don't want to take vacation. Making sure that you're not burnt out in your role. Again, positively, it's you positively contributing to mm-hmm. your department or your team or your organization. And then also, hopefully it started even before you took the role, that mm-hmm. you took the role or you went to that employer because you stand for their values, their mission, their vision. If someone's connected to that going into it, it makes it a heck of a lot okay. easier to feel like they're making an impact. And mm-hmm. then hopefully because they're feeling like they're making an impact, they're, and I don't want it to be like this, you know, I don't want to tell them to have like a false sense of positivity here. I don't want sure. or toxic positivity. I don't want that.
Right.
It's, I want you to genuinely feel good about your role, what you're doing. And that should start before you even accepted the job, if mm-hmm. that's where you want to be. But just the mindset is huge. Positive affirmations are huge. And then if your manager isn't, reach out to them to have mm-hmm. one-on-ones, or reach out to them to be like, hey, I noticed we haven't had a team meeting in quite some time. I would love to get our team together. That shows that you're trying, you're building, you have initiative, you're trying to build a change within your, and if things are not improving, that might not be a place you want to stay at.
Perfect. Well, Emily, thank you for your time and sharing some of your expertise today. This was really, I learned some things. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation. And for those of you that are out there listening to us, I just want to remind you, we love it when our alumni stand out among their peers. If there's anything that we can do here at the Alumni Relations Office to help you anyway, please don't hesitate to reach out. We have a lot of fun things coming up. Be sure to check us out at svsu.edu/alumni. And please remember, it's always a great day to be a Cardinal. Thank you very much.